everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is the Week in Review.
We must end the war in Ukraine and not escalate it further and further. This is madness.
If we help Ukraine now, they can become the best business partner we ever dreamed of.
Best business partner we ever dreamed of. Well, one prominent European politician that you saw right there says, get out of Ukraine, while this scuzzy U.S. politician says, nope, we need Ukraine's money. We got to stay there. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. All right, let's get to it. Gang's all here, as they used to say in the good old days, right? Joining me now is my esteemed panel, where we promise fresh and not mundane opinions, the hosts of the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik, Garland Nixon and Dr. Wilmer Leon. Garland, by the way, we should mention, has just made Ukraine's enemies list, a distinction he has worked all his life to achieve. All right, let's get started. Some U.S. and NATO countries are playing a very dangerous game right now. It's a game of chicken, really, with Russian President Vladimir Putin. And let me kind of put it this way for you. If you want to make a nuclear superpower really angry, tell him that you're going to attack his people with missiles, and then just watch and see what happens. You know what happens? This happens. Mr. Putin is now saying, essentially, you attack my country, I attack your country.
In the end, if we see that these countries become involved in a war against us, what they are doing makes them directly involved in a war against the Russian Federation, we reserve the right to act the same way. Overall, it leads to some serious problems.
We reserve the right to act the same way. I mean, what else can he say, Garland? What else can he say?
You know, I think what we're seeing, there's an old saying about running. Running's not a plan. Running's what you do when a plan doesn't work, right? What we're seeing now is this. We're seeing what happens in the West when the plan doesn't work. The plan was simply to start this war, to sanction Russia, and then the Russian economy was going to collapse and off the U.S. would go to balkanize Russia. Well, that plan failed disastrously, and now they're in a very dangerous spiral of trying to figure out how to deal with this, how to get out of it without total humiliation. The problem is this. They faced total humiliation when they got into this conflict, and there's no way for the West to get out of it without total humiliation. What we want to see is that we get out of it without costing all of us our lives.
Well, well said. By the way, there's another part to this story. I want to show you now something that's going on in Europe where really there's a lot of infighting about this. The German left-wing icon, Sarah Wagner, made some headlines this week. So what she says is what Western leaders like Scholz and Macron and Biden are doing is absolutely crazy. Yeah, France and Germany and the United States. Those are the three that are really pushing for this war for some reason. I mean, why the hell would Germany want to start a war with Russia? You know, they've been there before and lost. But anyway, let's take a listen.
At some point, there will be a point where something happens. And what happens then is so terrible that you don't want to imagine it. And that's why we can only appeal to everyone who bears responsibility in our country and in other Western countries to stop playing with fire.
She calls it playing with fire. So, I mean, I've been hearing all kinds of stuff this week. A lot of people are saying, this is crazy. This is absolute madness. This is insane. This is war hawking. Whatever name you want to use to describe this, the idea that Western countries like France and our country in particular, the United States of America, which I believe American citizens should be infuriated about something like this, Wilmer, the idea that our country is saying it's okay to send missiles to kill Russian citizens, our missiles. Pick it up, Wilmer.
Well, first to the point about President Putin and his response, it's important to realize that that is being translated here as though Putin is threatening the United States with nuclear missiles. Folks here don't seem to understand the difference between a threat and responding to a threat.
Yes.
And then, Rick, you also asked the question, why do the European leaders want to do this? I don't believe they really do. But vassals don't get the opportunity to make decisions on their own. They have to follow leadership all the way down. I was going to say a rabbit hole, but there are no rabbits down here. There are rats. This is a rat hole. Yeah. And they don't really, and the bombing of the Nord Stream 2 is the perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Olaf Scholz stood right next to Joe Biden when Joe Biden said, we are not going to allow this to happen. And it's not even the United States pipeline.
Yeah, you know, it's a great point that you make. And I think we should stop for a minute and have a quick conversation about this. Look, I'm not here to be a supporter of Russia or a fanatic of Russia or to, you know, carry water for Russia. I'm a journalist and I try to call them as I see them. But as I study this, and I think few Americans have because unfortunately they don't get a chance to, you just named, you know, one incident. I can name four or five other incidents. Mm-hmm. I can tell you how, you know, in 2014, we fomented a coup to change the government of Ukraine against Russia so that they would hate the Russians. I can tell you story after story where the Russians have kind of been extremely tolerant, actually. A lot of other countries would have said, to hell with you. We're tired of your interference. We're tired of you pointing missiles at us. We're tired of everything you've done, and we're going to start fighting back. It's taken the Russians almost two decades to finally say, you know what? We're tired of you guys sending missiles and killing now our citizens, and we're going to consider sending some ships to Cuba to show you that if we wanted to, we could do the same to you. And that's kind of what's going on now. And the idea that American media is reporting this as, look at this bully threatening America, it's just wrong completely. You're right. I don't know. You guys pick this up if you want, or add to your point, Wilmer.
Yeah.
Well, you're absolutely right. And to your point about other countries, the United States is one of those countries. It was called the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
Last I checked. And oh, by the by, when was the last time the United States actually won a conflict?
Yeah.
I think it was called World War II.
Well, I got one for you, yeah. Garland. I want you to watch this, okay? You guys probably have friends who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan. I do, too. So I'll start this way. I've got a lot of friends who fought in Iraq, and when I sit and talk with them, or I invite them over to my house, or I go over to their house, or we sit out by the pool and we have an adult beverage from time to time, not that I have many, but every once in a while I do, and they feel comfortable enough to say things to me they don't normally say in public, they'll admit to me the reason. They'll say to me, you know why I was in Iraq? I was in Iraq because my country needed the oil from Iraq. We were in Iraq for oil. That's what they say to me. The only reason I'm saying that is because I just heard South Carolina's senator, or as he's called by his good friends, Lady Lindsay, explaining why we must continue our takeover of Ukraine. I can't believe he said this, but I want you to listen to Lindsey Graham explaining why we're in Ukraine on CBS. Here it is.
They're sitting on $10 to $12 trillion of critical minerals in Ukraine. They could be the richest country in all of Europe. I don't want to give that money and those assets to Putin to share with China. If we help Ukraine now, they can become the best business partner we ever dreamed of.
Yeah, business partner. Business partners, when you go in and you take somebody's stuff and then you say, it's mine, but it's yours. But not really, because it's really mine. But anyway, wow. We were told it was about democracy. We were told it was about bridge building. We were told it was about controlling Russia. We were told it was about stopping a bully. We were told so many things. And then Lindsay just comes out and says, no, forget all that crap. You know what this is about? They got a lot of money and we want it. Oh my goodness. Garland, to you, sir.
All right, here's my position. You know, recently, Joe Biden has argued to the working class, this is going to benefit you because there will be jobs. You'll be able to build missiles, build bombs that are going to kill lots of people. It's going to work out for you. You're going to get jobs, right? I think what Lindsey Graham now is doing is, now that they're getting pushback from the ruling elite who are saying, hey, we don't want to die in a nuclear war. We're hearing that from Elon Musk, other people who are just, you know, Trump people who are getting cold feet about nuclear confrontation. I think now what Lindsey Graham is doing is the same thing. Hey, rich people, you'll get something out of this too. There's billions, there's trillions. I think it's now that he's just he's reaching out to another demographic to give them. There's a lie for everybody. Anybody who says, I don't want to, you'll get a girlfriend, you'll get food, you'll get anybody who comes towards them and says, I don't like it, they're going to have another lie as to how it benefits that particular group.
But those of us who have half a brain and have done even just a minute amount of reading about history know that what he's describing, war for money, is what we did in Panama, what we did in Colombia, what we did in Iran, what we did in Guatemala, what we did in Chile, what we did in Vietnam, and I can go on and on and on, and we would be here all damn day. So the idea that the United States goes into countries and the reason that we fight these wars is because we want to take a country's resources, I mean, as my kids would say when I was when they were younger, duh, Dad. I say to you, Wilmer, duh.
It's called imperialism. And the United States is a failing imperialist hegemon. That's what imperialists do. They go to other countries, they steal their resources, and they usually do it at the barrel of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, I think, when you hear Lindsey Graham. Remember, Lindsey Graham is a Donald Trump surrogate.
Yeah.
And one of the things that people despise about Donald Trump is he tells the tales out of school. He speaks the truth in many instances, not all, but he speaks the ugly truth that the imperialists always try to obfuscate or always try to hide. So as when you listen to Lindsey Graham, you're listening to Donald Trump.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to share something with the, I don't know, tens of millions of people who are watching us right now all over the world. When you hear Garland and Wilmer and myself talk about the United States, please understand the three of us love this country. We live here and we love this place, and we love for our family to love this place. And we're dads and we're brothers and everything else in this country. We're referring to the people who are leading this country. We're referring to a group of people who are running away with this thing who need to be stopped. It's not the country. Americans are a great people, and the United States is a great country. But the people who are now running this country are really, really bad people doing some really bad things. And that's the focus of our discussions. I know you didn't think that, but just in case you are, I wanted to make sure we cleared that up. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to tell you about some of the other things that are taking place right now in the world that have a lot to do with defiance. And these defiant acts in particular are taking place prima facie, as they say in law. In other words, they're taking place right in front of the face of the President of the United States. I'm going to show it to you. Don't go away.
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat.
Cuarto secuestro, ya me invitaron a mí a bajarme yo. O sea, yo secuestrarlo por primera vez.
A hairdresser, a bus driver, a salesperson. Anyone could become a victim. That's how private negotiators first appeared.
Tengo que enfrentar, asistir a un primo hermano, porque secuestraron a su cuñada en la...
A ver, hermano, vamos a ubicarlo. No te voy a faltar al respeto porque no gano nada con montarte la madre ni tratarte mal.
Y hasta septiembre del mismo año volví a pagar otra vez. Me mandaron los lóbulos de la niña.
Es muy difícil convencer a un familiar que diga que está dispuesto a correr ese riesgo.
México, por desgracia, desde hace más de 15 años, tiene el primer lugar de secuestros en el mundo, de secuestros económicos.
Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I want to introduce you to a group of guys you can listen to on The Critical Hour on Sputnik Radio. Pick it up. It's a great radio show. It's Dr. Wilmer Leon and Garland Nixon, and they are the hosts of the show, and you see them right there. They're handsome faces, and they join me once a week to really take apart all the topics or what we think has been important in our world over the last week. I talked a little while ago about defiance and how important I think defiance is. I think it's one of the best words. I love that word because every once in a while we need to be defiant. And I give kudos to those, or props, as my kids say, to people who are from time to time courageously defiant. Here's an anti-war activist who got into a Biden event just in the last couple of days. And let me tell you something, that's hard to do. The president of the United States right now, this dude Biden, is more protected than Hitler in 1932. They are so afraid that someone's going to say something to him or ask him the wrong question or embarrass him or worse. Obviously, we don't want any harm to come to our president. But nonetheless, it's really hard to get into these events nowadays, these Biden events. They're very few also. But this guy somehow paid or pretended to be a donor or something, and he got in. And then he stands up and he gets in the president's face. Now, remember, the people around, they've all given money to the Democratic Party. They're all like true believers, right? This guy gets up. He calls him Genocide Joe to his face. He accuses him of killing thousands of people in Gaza. It's hard to hear, so I'm going to play it for you twice. Here it is.
Dictator Duke Genocide Joe, tens of thousands of Palestinians. Dictator Duke Genocide Joe. Tens of thousands of Palestinians.
Four more years. I mean, I'm sorry, it sounds mean and I shouldn't say this. I'm a Catholic, but has he got four more years? They're shouting at the guy. The guy's being carried out. Unfortunately, he's telling the truth. This president has been responsible for the deaths of as many as 15,000 children in Gaza, and he's telling it like it is, and these people are booing him. The whole thing, as I often say, looks like a Fellini movie to me. Garland, pick it up.
We see here, one of the things that the Democrats have to do right now, and I've talked to people who've been involved in it, they have to curate the audiences, because polls show that 83% of the Democrats want to end the conflict in Gaza. 94% of Americans are in favor of a negotiated end to the Ukraine conflict. So what we have now is a Democratic Party that has completely abandoned its people. It's abandoned the anti-war nature of its constituency. And now they're at a war. They're at war with the people in their own. They're at a philosophical war and an ideological war with the people in their own party.
And then there's the other side of this story, the bullcrap that we're constantly told about how much vigor and vim and vigor this president has, that he's good. It's just that we don't get to see that. But behind the scenes, oh, this guy's doing push-ups and sit-ups and, you know, he's running the place and he's the supreme commander, et cetera, et cetera. Where is that? For these people to be thinking that we really can outlast this guy for 4 years. I'm sorry, I spoke too much. Wilmer, take it.
Well, a couple of things. One, you're talking about the management of optics, and they are so, so concerned about Biden going off script that they've got to control the optics. And what we just saw at this event is eerily reminiscent of what happened a couple of months ago at Mother Emanuel, which was a campaign event.
Yes.
Targeting the African-American community. And people stood up and started protesting, and they threw them out. You know, excuse me for confusing you with the facts.
Right.
I apologize. But, you know, the reality here is, and I'll be very, very surprised, two things. One, if there is a debate, because I don't think either side really wants to be on stage going toe-to-toe And I've been saying this for the last year and a half or so. I don't think at the end of the Democrats' convention that Joe Biden is going to be their nominee.
You know, I have said the same thing, and people have told me I'm full of it. And
maybe I got it for you. I probably got it from you.
Yeah, I did a whole segment on it once, and I'm kind of sticking to that. I think post-convention, after he accepts it, he might turn it over to somebody else, but we'll wait and see. Let's talk a little bit about Tucker Carlson. He's been doing some pretty interesting work. I know he's got this goofy laugh, but whatever. We'll get over that. He just posted an interview on his website with Thomas Massie. He's a U.S. congressman from Kentucky, which you guys know very well. Massie's one of the few U.S. politicians who does not take money or allow himself to be controlled by AIPAC, the lobby that represents the interests of Israel, not Jewish Americans, Israel. Big difference, by the way. Because of that, AIPAC has targeted him and attempted to take him out. Here's how he describes how his colleagues in Congress say they feel bad for him because of what AIPAC is doing to them, or to him, I should say. He describes for us what the conversations are like with them when they hear about what they're doing to him. Here it is.
Well, I have Republicans who come to me on the floor and say, I wish I could vote with you today. Yours is the right vote, but I would just take too much flack back home. And I have Republicans who come to me and say, that's wrong what AIPAC is doing to you. Let me talk to my AIPAC person. By the way, everybody but me has an AIPAC person.
What does that mean, an AIPAC person?
It's like your babysitter, your AIPAC babysitter, who is always talking to you for AIPAC. They're probably a constituent in your district, but they are, you know, firmly embedded in AIPAC.
Have you seen any other country do anything like this? Like
no.
Russia obviously determines the outcome of our elections. We keep hearing that. Does anyone have a Putin guy that they talk to?
Not only do they not have a Putin guy, look, they don't have a Britain guy. They don't have an Australian guy. They don't have a Germany dude. Mm-mm.
The only country in the world that lobbies on behalf of that country, not American citizens, in the United States. And by the way, they give more money to our members of Congress, that group, that lobbying organization, than any other lobbying organization in the United States, including sugar and manufacturing and everything else. And by the way, and let me say this again, I think this is important. Jewish Americans in the United States are wonderful people. They are all of our friends. Israel, as a country, is a wonderful place. AIPAC is there to represent the interests of Israel's foreign policies, not Israel, nor are they there to represent the interests of the average Jewish American. There, I said it. Garland, to you.
You know, I could even make this argument. AIPAC is not there to represent on the interests of Israel for this reason. Look at Israel right now. It's a basket case. It's a disaster.
You're right.
It is a smoking pile of rubble. The people are in the street angry at their leadership. The people in Netanyahu is in power because the U.S. keeps him in power. And even the Israelis believe that he is the worst leader that they've ever had. So if you look at the Israelis on the street, if you look at their day-to-day lives, if you look at the security of the country, it is a disaster. So the so-called leadership of AIPAC, the leadership of Joe Biden, the leadership of the people that are so-called pro-Israel. Well, let me tell you something. If those people were pro-Garland and my life was as miserable in a hellscape like Israel is, I'd look for new leaders and supporters.
And that's a fascinating point that you make, and it's a damn good one. Let me tell you something. I believe that AIPAC, with what it's pushing, is causing more pain for Israel and will for many Jews around the world for decades and decades to come. And that's not a good thing. So they're failing is the point you make. Well said. Wilmer, pick that up for us, if you would.
Well, what you're articulating is the difference between Judaism and Zionism. And AIPAC is not pro-Israel. AIPAC is pro-Zionist. Hmm. And unfortunately, what a lot of Zionists have been able to do is they've been able to confuse and combine and make people believe that if you're anti-Zionist, you're anti-Jewish. And those two things couldn't be further from the truth. If you understand, Joe Biden, not all Zionists are Jews and not all Jews are Zionists. Joe Biden is an admitted Zionist, yeah, which is a racist, white supremacist ideology. And it was reported in a number of mainstream papers in this country, AIPAC has committed $100 million to the 2024 campaign,
wow,
to ensure that anti-Zionist, yes, candidates,
yes,
do not get elected, yeah, on either side of the aisle. Again, excuse me for confusing you with the truth.
Yeah, and I think the main point out of this, and I think it's really an important point, is we as Americans should reserve the right to criticize the foreign policy of our country and certainly that of another country without being called names for doing so, which is too often what happens. By the way, next week, we're going to be talking about the G7, but I'm thinking about maybe even not talking about it because, you know what? I'm starting to think the G7 just doesn't matter so much as it used to in the past.
You need to talk about BRICS.
So exactly. I was going to say there's a ton of news that's been coming out of BRICS and very little news that I think will come out of the G7, but we'll play fair and take a good look at both. Hey, guys, thanks a lot. Enjoy your weekends. Have a great time. And as usual, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
That's our show. Remember, always, always, always look for your own box. Don't be afraid to look outside of your box. I think that's what I meant to say. Truths don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll see you next time.